everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a single random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about M. Night Shyamalan's 2002 film, Signs. Now, again, longtime listeners may be a bit perturbed at us because we announced last week that we're going to be watching a movie called The Hit, and then when we settled in to actually watch it today, it was removed from Netflix Instant Watch. So I'm going to be better about looking that stuff up in the future and making sure that doesn't happen again. So I apologize if anyone's actually listened to or watched The Hit and is expecting to hear us talk about that, because we're not going to do that right now. So maybe one day down the line, if it returns to Instant Watch, we'll check it out.
If you did see The Hit, please email us and tell us if it's worth watching, because if it's not, we're not going to do it.
Yes, and that right there is the voice of Jared Blanchard, who's a guest on our show today. He actually was on the very first, the inaugural Not Just New Movies podcast episode, in which we talked about Batman. Highly recommend checking that one out if you guys haven't already. Jared, thanks for coming back.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here, Benjamin.
And I also have another guest, my good friend Tim Turner. Tim is joining us, a longtime friend, a longtime movie fan, and a friend of the podcast. So, Tim, thanks for being here.
Thank you for allowing me to be on here.
Definitely. We are minus Pat yet again. I believe he's kind of indisposed for an interminable amount of time. I'm not entirely sure what his podcasting status is going to be, but there seems to be some contention there. And we're also missing Tyler Brands, our trusty co-host. He is good riddance. Yeah, I apologize to any, all, and both of his fans. He'll be joining us next week, I'm sure. So,
Good luck on your ultrasound, Tyler.
Yes. All right. So if you guys are just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish up with your listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So I did the character name game last week, but I'm going to do it again because obviously you guys are guests and you don't know anything about this. But the character name game is a game that we started a while back in which I, this week, will pick a character name, and you guys have to tell me what movie that character is from. So at the very end of the episode, we'll return to it. But the character for this week is Dr. William Block. So be thinking about that. We'll return to it. And also, a little hint is that the character has to be in some way, or the movie has to be in some way related to a movie that was released in theaters this past weekend. So we'll come back to that in a little while. So let's go ahead and move on into the media consume section. Tim, why don't we start with you? What have you been watching lately?
Well, let me think. I got Serenity the DVD for Christmas and rewatched that. I highly recommend that. Great movie, great TV show. And I guess we saw the documentary yesterday, but I'll let you guys talk about that. And then I actually, based on a recommendation from the Geek Tyrant podcast, watched the Love Me If You Dare, which was pretty good. So
yeah, I think that was like that was Mazur's like number 5 on his top 5 list.
And I believe 100. That's how Tyrant got the name, is from a quote from there. Which it was definitely a good watch. So.
Cool. Yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out. There's a lot of those from that episode that I've written down that I need to go through and watch and stuff. Good recommendations from everybody. Jared, let's go to you. What have you been consuming lately?
Oh, I haven't had much time during the Christmas break to watch, but I have seen That's Entertainment 2 with Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly, and that was a ton of dance clips, which was very entertaining.
What is the premise of the... Is it just a montage, basically?
Or? It's an hour and a half montage of dancing.
Wow. Okay. It's just like pulled from their various movies, or is this something that they did specifically...
No, as far as I could tell, it was like 40 years of dance sequences.
And you just sat through it all?
Yeah, I just kind of absorbed it as my grandmother basked in the glory of the old-timey cinema.
Okay, all right. There's a little bit of context that we probably needed, that you're watching it with your grandmother, so good stuff. I watched a movie called El Mariachi. I'm sure you guys have heard of this. This is the, I guess it's technically a prequel to Desperado, which is the Robert Rodriguez directed movie with Antonio Banderas and Selma Hayek. It's really badass. Have you guys seen Desperado?
Yeah, I love Desperado. And that wasn't there a sequel to that
too? Yeah, Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Okay. El Mariachi is the first of this trilogy. and it was made, I think, for $7,000. There's Robert Rodriguez directed, you know, wrote and directed this as well. There's a really good book called Rebel Without a Crew, and it kind of details Rodriguez's time making this movie, and he basically kind of checked himself into this clinic to let this kind of all these science experiments be done on him in exchange for money to fund this movie. And it's like a diary format. The book is kind of a diary format of like, this day, this happened, this is, so basically, it's a really cool look at, like, really super low-budget filmmaking, like, as it was happening. So I would recommend, if you guys have seen Desperado, if you know about Robert Rodriguez and his kind of run-and-gun shooting style and stuff, if you're into filmmaking at all, definitely check out this book. What were you going to say?
Was it made before Desperado and then...
Yeah, that's... El Mariachi is the movie that basically put Robert Rodriguez on the map. It, you know, it was made for such little money, and it was really not even intended to be released in theaters, I think. It was supposed to be just kind of like a Mexican, almost like direct-to-tape type of thing, kind of like a exploitation film, almost. But it was on, like, one of the Encore movie channels while I was home over the break, so I decided to check it out because I haven't seen it, and I'm a fan of Rodriguez from, you know, Sin City and obviously some of his more recent things. But yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, it's very obvious that it was shot for such little money, and Desperado is leagues above. Desperado is almost a remake of El Mariachi, so you're not really missing much if you don't see it. You can very clearly find out what's going on in the story just by watching Desperado and then following it up with Once Upon a Time in Mexico. But all that said, I wasn't disappointed with El Mariachi. I mean, it's a little cheesy at points, and it's, again, very, very low budget, but probably worth checking out if you're a hardcore Rodriguez fan. So, Jared, why don't you tell us a little bit about Exit Through the Gift Shop? We watched this yesterday. It's a documentary, and you got it for Christmas, so we decided to check it out.
All right, I want to preface this with a spoiler warning. I mean, like, skip ahead 2 or 3 minutes into the podcast if you haven't seen this movie, because it's really one that's worth going blind into. I don't think I've interacted with anyone who knew anything about this movie before they seen it, and I think that's what, you know, contributed in large part to its overall enjoyment. But, okay, so if you've left, you know, all right, so we're among the initiated.
Yes.
Or the people who are willing to be spoiled.
Right.
And it's a documentary by the street artist Banksy. And I really don't know enough about him to give him any sort of proper background. But he's a street artist in Britain who's gained some notoriety for graffitiing upon the West Bank wall. And among other things, sneaking, you know, his own art into museums and such.
Yeah.
And he created a documentary... It was and it follows around this strange French man named Terry, who happened upon the underground street art world and began filming it with no real intention of ever creating a documentary, but just going out every night with some of the most famous street artists in the world and filming them in action, in their heyday, in their prime, doing what they do best.
Yeah, this is all going on, like, through the, what, early to mid-2000s or something, mm-hmm. kind of in that in that time frame. So I guess that was the kind of rise of this modern street art. I mean, obviously graffiti's been around for a while, but these guys...
No, I don't think it has been. I believe this is a recent development.
These guys have kind of turned it into this whole new thing. Just do, like, a Google image search for Banksy, and you'll see some of the stuff that he's done. Yeah, the movie, I mean, Tim, what did you think about this movie?
Well, I mean, I think none of us really knew anything about street art going into it, and it kind of gives you a new appreciation, and to be honest, going into it, if I had looked that up and said, oh, it's about street art, it might not even piqued my interest as much, but now that I've seen it, I'd highly recommend it, and it kind of gives you a new appreciation, and things that you've seen on, like, famous icons you've seen, you kind of see a history of that, and I ended up looking up on Wikipedia afterwards and looked up a bunch of these guys and was kind of curious about it. And the documentary itself, although about street art, has kind of another twist to it, too, and almost kind of a moral story, in a sense, so you can kind of get something out of that, which
yeah,
I think is pretty cool.
Definitely. I think that's probably the most interesting aspect, is that you never are really too sure, and I haven't even looked it up after we watched it, because we just watched it yesterday. I'm not entirely sure the circumstances around the controversy of the movie, but there's apparently some question as to whether or not it's an actual documentary, or whether or not it's just some sort of
elaborate joke on the part of Banksy.
Right, yeah, some sort of performance experiment, piece.
Like, can he trick the masses, or I don't even know.
Yeah.
But, and we don't have to say more than that, to pique interest, but...
Yeah. It's like, you know, based on what little we know of Banksy and his work and stuff, it seems like he's really into subversion on a massive scale. So yeah. Something like creating a quote-unquote fake documentary or however it happened to, you know, because Jared was mentioning this guy, Terry, had just started filming all this stuff. So all that had really happened. You know, there's a lot of this movie that actually happened. Almost all of it is quote-unquote real, but
I would say the first two-thirds are certainly real, and
yeah.
Then the question is if the last third is a hoax or not.
Yeah, well, whether or not Banksy kind of got a hold of the footage and then tried to manipulate it into something different than what...
And not that it happened, but if it happened the way it did.
Right, yeah, yeah.
It's the important part.
Yeah, or if it happened with due to Banksy's, like, kind of pushing in certain directions, because mm-hmm. it seems like Terry as a character... as a real person, it's just kind of this clueless guy, and
he's very competent in making money.
Right, yeah, he seems to have found the key, but he doesn't necessarily have a lot of respect among the community that he so actively documented, so, yeah, I guess we'll just kind of leave it at that, but definitely, if you have listened to this and you haven't seen the movie yet, check out Exit Through the Gift Shop. It's available on DVD now.
Yeah, I think it's a good criticism of, you know, mass media and commercial art in general and the commercial art market.
Yeah, totally. All right, well, let's go ahead and move on into our review of...
And it's really funny. It's really fun.
It is pretty funny.
It is very funny, yes, I will agree with that.
It's just, I think we glossed over just how enjoyable of a watch it is.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that is kind of audacious in it, like, you're like, really, these guys are actually doing this? And then also the kind of bumbling characters and stuff that appear throughout Terry especially, and his kind of just weird outlook on the whole situation. Definitely
it's well edited too, like, it's not too long, not too short, you know, dips, and
yeah.
does everything a good documentary should. So.
Yes, indeed. So. All right, well, yeah, let's go ahead and move on into our review of M. Night Shyamalan's Signs.
Crop signs first emerged in the late 70s. Many people believed they were created by extraterrestrials. The rest dismissed them as hoaxes. This new resurgence is wholly different. The speed and the quantity in which it has appeared implies the coordination of hundreds of individuals over many countries. There are only a limited number of explanations. Either this is one of the most elaborate hoaxes ever created.
There's a monster outside my room. Can I have a glass of water?
Or basically, it's for real.
All right, so Signs, directed by M. Night Shyamalan, 2002, I think one of his better movies. Tim, why don't we start with you? What did you think about Signs?
I overall think it's a pretty fantastic movie as far as what it set out to accomplish and what it ended up doing. I think there's a lot of criticism as there's holes in it, in and out, throughout the movie, and there's a lot of things you could kind of say to talk it down as far as the actual plot goes. But as far as, I just look back to my movie experience when I saw it in theaters with a bunch of friends and think about, you know, I went into it not really knowing what to think, and kind of came out surprised at, you know, the impact of emotion it had and the story it had. And I think a good example of that is that I watched that movie with my mom probably about a year ago, and that's the last time I saw it. And she hates, you know, alien films, horror films. If it's rated R, she doesn't want to see it. You know, doesn't like any of those kind of films, but I told her to just sit down and watch it. And she really enjoyed it just because of the story it tells, and it tells it in this kind of environment. So I really enjoy it and highly recommend it and think it's a fantastic film and probably one of my favorites. So
nice. Jared, what about you? What did you think?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I agree with Tim. I really enjoyed the film. There's certainly numerous plot holes, but, I mean, it's an extremely character-driven film, I think. So in that sense, like, you know, having a somewhat shady plot from time to time doesn't necessarily take away from the experience. And I think that, you know, for every kind of weird thing about the plot that you think back to, like, there's also, like, a good character moment that kind of counters it. So I'd say overall it was it's a good M. Night Shyamalan movie for certain.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, M. Night Shyamalan has gotten, I was gonna say a not really deserved bad rap over the years, but it's let's face it, it's deserved at this point. Yeah. I was a big M. Night Shyamalan supporter back in the day when Sixth Sense came out. Obviously, Unbreakable I like a lot. Probably half of his filmography I really enjoy.
The first half.
The first half, exactly. And then after that, it just dramatically goes down. I am one of those, I guess, few people maybe that liked The Village.
See, I like The Village for the most part, but I think it's after The Village is when it's really starting
right.
to kind of peak down.
Yeah, exactly. Like Lady in the Water, and then The Happening was just, like, apparently, I mean...
It happened.
It
like,
did.
I went with The Happening to my mom because we'd seen Signs and convinced her to go, even though it was rated R.
Yeah.
It was just, like, the worst, like, thing I could possibly do.
Yeah, the thing about The Happening is, like, I think it was supposed to be bad, but nobody got the memo. Like, M. Night Shyamalan was trying to make a kind of 50s style movie, kind of like those old Invasion of the Body Snatchers, like the super old school alien movies, and just didn't tell anybody what it was.
Or marketing took one look at that and was like, that's not gonna sell. Alright, here's how we're cutting the trailer.
Yeah, and like the you know, Mark Wahlberg especially. I mean, Mark Wahlberg I think can be a very good actor as whatever. I think he won an Oscar for Best Supporting for The Departed, if I'm not mistaken, or at least nominated. It's very obvious that Mark Wahlberg can be good in things, and he was horrifyingly bad in The Happening. Like,
but
so bad.
I just think the whole movie, every single character was just wrong.
Yeah.
The whole plot was wrong.
Yeah, okay, so, you know, this Signs being in the early days of M. Night Shyamalan, I think, I don't know, maybe his craft was still kind of at a better point before this kind of slow degradation into, you know, culminating with The Last Airbender, which I didn't even see, but is apparently unwatchably bad. I don't know.
I didn't see that. I will say that I saw the film he recently scripted, Devil.
Oh, yeah, what'd you think?
And I think because it was kind of separated from the hype that usually comes with his name, and it actually was just, like, a tightly scripted, low-budget horror film that was really enjoyable.
The thing about that, I don't think he actually wrote it. It's a part of this series called The Night Chronicles, which Media Rights Capital or Universal or one of the kind of offshoots signed M. Night Shyamalan to make this three-movie stretch. And Devil was the first of the three. And it's just movies based on ideas that he had. So he came up with a concept. I don't think he actually wrote it. I know he produced it. But I've heard some good things about Devil. I mean, I've never heard anybody say that it's, like, among his best work or kind of on par with Sixth Sense or anything, but I have heard that it's surprisingly good for something that has come out in recent years with M. Night Shyamalan's name attached to it.
So he didn't write it?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, it wasn't a bad premise.
Yeah. So, Tim, I know you're a big fan of Joaquin Phoenix's character in this movie. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I mean, as you said perfectly well, that it's character-based, and I think some of the characters, I think the only real characters I didn't believe in were the kids, because not that they weren't badly written or that they weren't good actors, but they just didn't act like kids. They act almost like, kind of like creepy adults, in a sense. They're more creepy than, and almost the kid humor from it kind of comes from his brother, who's played by Joaquin Phoenix, who's just, who's very realistic and very kind of, he's the humor of the story, and almost kind of like a lot of general perception. I mean, Mel Gibson's character is so kind of distraught over things. His viewpoint's just not what you'd think, and the kids are just out there. And Joaquin Phoenix just kind of has this perception of things where it's from a more realistic approach, like, what the heck's going on here? Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And is just a great character, well-written, well-played.
Yeah, and this is one of those things that the movie itself, I think, has a lot of setup and a lot of payoff. with the bottles of water or the glasses of water and stuff. Like, mm-hmm. one of the few well-written things about the girl was, or the daughter, was that she, you know, this whole water thing where she just drinks constantly and, you know, claims that the water's contaminated or has dust in it or whatever. So there's always kind of different glasses of water set up all around their house, and that actually comes into play and becomes like a major plot point later on. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Joaquin Phoenix, where it's like
he's a baseball player,
yeah, and, the baseball,
you know,
stuff, and then
he's kind of a cocky. He always swung, you know, highest strikeout but highest home run hits.
Yeah, and, exactly.
And you see, kind of one, you know, one of those high schoolers that did really well, and then, you know, hasn't really made it in the world, but he's kind of stuck around too, also because of his family and his brother who looks up to, and. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just really enjoy watching him in that. And
yeah, and I think it's one of his better performances. A lot of people probably don't necessarily give him the credit. I mean, when you think about Signs, a lot of people, I'm sure, don't really remember Joaquin Phoenix, but he's definitely one of the best parts of the movie, I think.
Definitely. I think he's definitely my favorite part. I think he plays a simple character in a way that the character's not stupid, he's just simple.
Yeah.
And you can kind of, like he reacts the way, in a very kind of muted way. Like, his eyes kind of give, like, this 5-year-old, like, kind of gleam. Like, that's how a 5-year-old would react to what was going
well,
on.
That's why I feel like. I feel like he plays the role that the kids would play, where it's kind of like an innocence.
No, I definitely
agree. And he's kind of watching his brother kind of fall apart before his eyes. It's almost kind of like, you know, it's a good little brother, big brother kind of scenario where this guy he looked up to. And you almost kind of feel that would be the same for the kids it's different because it's their dad. But their kids are just so nonchalant. I mean, they just kind of go by in their own little creepy world.
Well, I think the movie, like, has this kind of sense of isolation to it. They very rarely leave their farmhouse area, mm-hmm. and they're all, you know, kind of enclosed in with this corn and everything. And that kind of, I think, serves to heighten the family aspect of it and, like, force the audience to kind of relate to this kind of really close-knit mm-hmm. family because they're essentially shut off from everything else. I mean, for the first half of the movie, Mel Gibson's character refuses to turn on the TV and, like, mm-hmm. let them even find out what's going on. It's all about just kind of keeping together and keeping everybody level-headed and all that. So I think that plays into it a little bit.
Well, and I think that also adds to the fact that, like, if when you try to break it apart, too, you say, like, well, how would they, you know, how would the world react like this if this was what was really happening? And I think the fact that the history of the family, of what's happened to them, and then the fact that they're isolated, and the fact that they're trying not to build up during this scenario. Like, even the cop, I think, reacts to them differently because of what they've been through right now at that point. And so, and I think that kind of adds to the fact that this is how this scenario could ultimately happen, where they're literally stuck in their house when an alien invasion comes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. We're talking about some of the plot holes and stuff. What things did you guys find that could be kind of maybe questionable in that area?
The aliens come, they've decided, apparently the premise of the film
this is the big one, of course, go ahead.
Right, the aliens are going to fight us in hand-to-hand combat because they fear that we will use nuclear weapons unless they come and jujitsu us or something. Yet they seem to be the most incompetent combatants imaginable. And another huge plot hole is their biggest weakness is water, and they come to a planet that is it like 3/4 of which is 75%. Water, 75%.
Yeah,
and they don't even wear like suits or anything like that. It's
if they just get a rain slicker or something.
Yeah, and we were talking about this while we were watching it, and you mentioned that on the newscast or whatever they say, you know, it was the Morgan, the younger son, says something about how. You know, he gets this book of, like, alien extraterrestrial stuff, and he's kind of, like, dictating to his family what he's learned from this book, and he's talking about how they would come down and kind of detailing their invasion plans or whatever.
They're either hostile or they're not, and they're either, like, here to better themselves and learn more about the universe, or they're here to, like, harvest our planet.
Yeah, exactly.
And then ultimately the twist too that I think was missed on you originally, but I knew just from watching it before, is that they didn't come to harvest the planet, they came to harvest us. And that's why they kind of kept it, I mean, I'll go ahead and try to defend the plot holes.
Yeah.
They kept it kind of low key in their invasion. They just wanted to grab a few people, use their little poison thing or whatever, and then take them because they wanted them to eat. I don't know ultimately why, but so they try to keep it on a low scale thing where we wouldn't, you know, go in outright war and start blowing things up. They just wanted to kind of in and out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I remember what I was going to say. The nuclear thing. I mean, you know, Jared mentioned that the premise is that, like, they are supposed to be fighting and hand-to-hand stuff because otherwise we would attack with nuclear force, like, retaliate. And I feel like we would probably do that anyway. Like, you know, they've got, whatever, hundreds of things ships that are above, just up in the air. Like, what is the American government going to do? Not shoot those down? Yeah. Like, I don't know.
And that's the other thing, is that, I mean, if they can fly here on ships and, you know, make these crop rows and they can't wear a suit or, you know, or realize that, you know, these people have water.
Yeah, everywhere. Take a measurement, like, of, like, the planet's atmosphere, yes, and see how much water is in there.
Plumbing is their downfall.
So ultimately, is the aliens' gross underestimation of, like, what is going on, that probably can throw you off. But that's what I don't think it's a movie about alien invasion.
Sure.
I really don't.
Yeah,
it's about kind of a loss of faith and a gain of faith, and it's kind of outlined in that pinnacle point where he's talking with his brother, and he, you know, that's pretty much the moral of the story. Are you that kind of person where all these things, these glasses of water, his asthma, his baseball career, do they add up to something? Or,
yeah,
even his wife's death, which was his loss of faith.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just the way it all came together and the way he brought it together, I think, was just what makes the movie great.
Yeah, that's definitely an awesome scene. And, like, even the lighting and stuff, too, where it's, like, half of his face is light,
yes,
and half,
yeah,
it's dark and stuff. You're still just kind of, like, not really sure which way Mel Gibson's character is going to fall kind of on that.
And that's where you really see the two brothers and this kind of loss of faith in the younger one is just, like, shocked.
Yeah, because the kids are asleep at that point,
yeah,
so it's really just kind,
mm-hmm,
of them talking.
Mm-hmm. I mean, ultimately, I think what you can take out of this is you can view it through a number of things. I mean, you can view it through a religious standpoint. You can view it through, you know, just, how things shape out in the world. And there's just a lot that can be taken from it. And I think that's why it just ultimately was crafted into a great movie and is one of my favorites. And is why M. Night Shyamalan, I guess, at one point in time was just a great storyteller.
Yeah.
That you can kind of appreciate. Despite these plot holes, I think as many plot holes as there were to take away, I mean, there's enough to defend it where you can't get caught up in that.
Yeah, I think, you mentioned being able to look at it through kind of a religious filter. I think that's pretty much the only way. The movie kind of forces that on you.
A little bit.
But I was fine with it. Like, you know, I don't have a problem with it.
It's, not at all.
You know, there are movies like that, and they're, I don't know, it's just one of those things. I guess I'd be interested to see maybe what, like, an atheist's take on this movie would be.
I agree.
So if you fit that category, email us, notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. But yeah, I mean, any movie that deals with the main character as a preacher or what, a father, mm-hmm, you know, that's going to happen. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously we'd seen this movie a lot of times before. I mean, I've seen it,
mm-hmm,
a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the jump scare moments and stuff, we already knew what they were, but try to think back to your, like, first viewing of the movie. Were there any particular moments that, like, you know, because I think there's, like, three or four kind of big ones in the movie. Were those effective the first time you guys saw it? Do you remember?
In theaters, I know I was. I remember, you know, there's little moments where, you know, he's on top of the roof, and you're like, wait, what was that? And then, you know, the foot. And then ultimately, I guess the big one is the closet and then the hand coming down on him when he's in the chute. They're all pretty much startling moments. I kind of went into the movie originally not knowing what to expect, and I didn't even think there'd be aliens in it. Like, I thought it was just like a hoax movie. I don't even know what to think when I went into it.
Yeah.
But I remember jumping a bunch. And that, a preface to that is I'm not, you know, a common horror movie watcher.
Yeah.
But I thought they were fairly effective when I first watched them. And even watching today, there's kind of a glare. You couldn't see the nighttime ones as well. But
yeah,
I think they're pretty effective as far as what he did.
Oh, no, I definitely agree. I mean, and, like, the unsettled animals is always kind of creepy.
Yeah,
and cornfields are just scary. Like, I just don't ever want to wander through one at night is what it all comes down to.
Yeah.
Just bad things happen, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I kind of liked the how it didn't necessarily right off the bat go straight to aliens. It took a little while to get into that. Like, they did entertain the notion that it was these,
mm-hmm,
brothers and stuff who were just messing around. Like, if this was an isolated incident in Mel Gibson's character's backyard or on his property or whatever, and then only after whatever, probably half an hour or something.
Well, I think even then, you still don't quite know. And then they show, I think, the birthday parties when it all kind of climaxes, and then they're like, oh, this is an alien invasion.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, that's, you know, an alien. This is an alien film. There's aliens in this, and they're pretty damn creepy. So,
yeah.
Pretty darn, sorry.
No, it's fine. Yeah, I mean, Jared, you were talking about, like, you really liked the concept of like, the kind of full-scale prank version of how this movie might have turned out in an alternate universe or something.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're first watching and you know that M. Night Shyamalan is all about twists and it looks like it's going to be aliens, you think, no, it's not going to be aliens. Like, I was really hoping that it was going to be a wide-scale internet flash mob that was making these crop circles. And eventually, it's just a flash mob that gets out of control and just, like, has a worldwide revolution.
I think that could be a good movie in and of itself.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, the birthday party was definitely the moment, you know, because that's, like, the first real appearance of the alien, aside from, like, the foot and stuff that you mentioned before.
And but, I think Joaquin Phoenix's character kind of reflects how I, you know, almost how I felt when I'm like, oh, whoa, you know what I mean?
Like, falls back away from the TV.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, you know, M. Night Shyamalan has cited Hitchcock as being a massive influence. I think he's been trying to kind of emulate him, maybe in his earlier works, not so much later, but... Hitchcock has this thing where, like, he says that suspense, like, the best part of a suspense is, like, you know, shooting a hallway scene or something, like, where the camera's just slowly moving toward a door at the end of the hallway, and you don't know what's behind the door, and that's the best part, is, like, the build-up, you know, the suspense, and once you open the door, it kind of loses a little bit, and I feel like this movie suffers from that slightly. Like, once you see the alien, like, it's not as scary as it is in your mind, because you have something concrete to look at and something tangible to see, but they did a good job of not really showing a lot about it. Even in the final scene where, like, the alien breaks into their house and has the son the Culkin boy in his arms, Morgan is the character's name, you know, he's kind of dark and shaded and stuff, and, like, they didn't really show a lot of... They didn't rely, like, too much on CG and all that.
They used, like,
that.
The TV glare glimpse a lot.
Yeah, exactly, and I think that's some of the...
Which is fine, I think. I mean, because it ultimately wasn't the point of the thing, was to... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They almost could have went even more shadow, and you just see less of them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely like that, the TV reflection and stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably some of that Hitchcock kind of rubbing off on Shyamalan a little bit. And then also, you know, getting to that, you know, while we're talking about that final scene, I mean, obviously it culminates with the whole, like, swing away thing and what you're talking about, the entire movie basically being this kind of question of, like, is everything a coincidence or is there this kind of higher power kind of dictating this entire series of events from the beginning? And the part that, you know, the other prong, if you will, is, like, at the end when... Morgan's character, you know, he has asthma, and even that, like, was that set up, you know, from the beginning for this particular moment where, like, the alien tries to poison him, but because his lungs are shut, you can't, you know, he doesn't die or whatever. So, there's a lot of, like I said, a lot of payoff and a lot of setup in this movie. I think it holds up really well.
And I think when you watch it again, knowing the ending and stuff, you see more, like, little things that are in the dialogue in the beginning. You know, he doesn't take the dog to the vet when it pees. Takes it to the doctor, and the guy's like, well, he doesn't know anything about animals. Like, little things.
Yeah.
Because you learn that the vet is the guy who killed his wife, and he doesn't want to see him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's just a bunch of little build-up to little things that you learn. Obviously, the glasses of water.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite shots watching it this time, because it's been many years since I've seen it, but Mel Gibson, like, goes to pick up some of the glasses, and then like the camera kind of slides over a little
and
bit, and
like,
reveals
oh,
that there's
it.
More
I
of them, yeah, and he just puts it back down. And that, I mean, that saved the family's
and
life.
Then,
you know,
and then
at the
when
end
they
of the, movie.
The first glass hits the guy, like, the alien's shoulder, they kind of they're all like look around. And there's just glasses everywhere. It's like just like one of those epic, you know, like awesome. And you know, he's sitting there beating him with a freaking
bat. He just goes off on him with that bat. That was pretty great.
And also, I mean, to go along with that glass thing, I mean, if the veterinarian hadn't run over his wife, the veterinarian would have later called him and then told him that he theorized that water was their weakness.
Yeah.
I mean, I realized they would have picked that up pretty quickly anyways, but they had already suspected it and then seen it happen.
Yeah, and well, they might not have picked it up as quickly as we think, because on the newscast or whatever, like, the little girl comes in and says, like, oh yeah, everybody's dancing on TV, they've won, or whatever. And then you hear the newscast in the background, and they're like, yeah, you know, people have been defeated in certain parts of the world. No more details are available at this time. And it's like, really? Like, why wouldn't they say they were defeated by splashing water on them or something? Just letting everyone know, hey, if you happen to be in a situation where you still see one of these bastards, like, this is how you take care of
well,
them.
Well, it's just one of those other, like, plot holes where you kind of discredit it as far as a realistically happening at that point.
Yeah.
But
no, I think you're right. It's absolutely not like a real alien movie. It's more about the family and their relationships and stuff, and a lot of that is very well done on M. Night Shyamalan's part, both writing and being able to kind of take this isolated setting and expand it slightly, but keep it, you know, really tight-knit around the family, I think.
Yeah, and I think another interesting thing is, of course, the debate in the movie is whether everything is coincidence or if a higher power planned it. And, I mean, obviously, in reality, a higher power, as in, like, the director, the writer, did plan it.
Yeah.
Like, so it's kind of like characters conscious of trying to figure out whether or not, like, they're in a plot. I don't know.
Yeah, it's meta.
It's very meta. Well, that's for you, Tyler. Yeah.
Nice.
And I think one last comment is on the ending scene where it shows him, you know, he's back in his, you know, a caller, I guess is what it's correctly called, as a reverend. And I kind of like it when, you know, a movie will kind of show an afterthought of, you know, when you hear kids laughing in the background, it's snowing, so you know no aliens going to be around. That'd be like a firestorm for them.
Yeah.
You know? But it kind of shows that he regained his faith, that they're a happy family again, and, you know, it kind of ends it on a note, not with the kid in his arms after asthma. And I think it's a good afterthought, too.
Yeah, totally.
And I will say that if I had lived in the world of Signs, I would never leave my house without a Super Soaker again.
Yeah, you know, you'd never go through a cornfield or anything that might look like a chameleon, large chameleon alien. You might take a baseball bat too.
There you go. Just strap a baseball bat to your back and holster up with Super Soakers. That's awesome.
That would be a classic sequel of Mel Gibson.
Oh, that's one other thing that I was going to talk about. What did you guys, like, watching this movie now with as kind of crazy as Mel Gibson has gone in the past year or two, did that affect your viewing experience watching this movie now? Jared, what did you think?
I mean, only in kind of an amusing sense, like, you know, kind of adding extra quotes to some of his statements.
Yeah, quotes from the leaked phone calls and stuff to this shouting and things.
I mean, just because someone's crazy doesn't make them any less talented. And yeah, he may be a cad and a terrible person, but it was a great performance. I mean,
okay. It's like the Tom Cruise argument, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, as much whatever you think about his personal life, you know what I mean? They're all pretty talented, and I think Mel Gibson does a fantastic job. And it really, I think it's a shame, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's so many Mel Gibson films I love. But I'm not going to let all this hype up of the recent things try to ruin them.
Is that something that is going to affect whether or not you see a new Mel Gibson movie?
I don't think so, ultimately.
Yeah.
I mean, our world loves to forget. I mean, no one, I mean, Michael Vick's throwing touchdowns right now, everyone loves. You know, I mean, like, the world loves to forget, and I don't think it's our place to not, you know, to keep it in memory. I don't think it would.
What do you think?
If it's a good movie, I'm going to see it. Like, the world loves a winner. Like, as Tim said, you know, Michael Vick's on top of the world again. Things just don't matter as long as you're a winner.
Yeah, there's this new show called Lights Out that's coming out on FX, and the catchphrase, the tagline for the show is, "This country loves a comeback."
Yeah.
And this guy always says it with this kind of raspy voice or whatever. But yeah, I mean, that's absolutely right. We do love a comeback.
I mean, even Tiger Woods, people are rooting for him hardcore again. Mm-hmm. They want him to win another.
Yeah, maybe Mel's got another one in him. We'll see. In any case, I hope he returns to directing soon.
Yeah,
he's done some really great stuff.
A lot of great stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well.
Good luck casting women.
Yeah. Exactly. That's not going to be the easiest thing. Let's. I've got a...
that's true, too.
I don't think anybody heard that, so we're just going to move on. I've got the... Tyler lent me the old Apple II, so I'm going to pull this handle right here and see what we're going to be watching next week. Oh, it looks like Death to Smoochie, 2002. I believe Danny DeVito directed this movie, starring Robin Williams and Edward Norton. So I've never seen this before. Hopefully Tyler will be back for next week. So we'll see what happens with Death to Smoochie. all right, so let's go ahead and move on into...
find the ditch he's currently face down in. We'll pull him out, dust him off, and see how it goes.
Let's move into our listener voicemails and emails. We do have one email this week. Sean writes, surprised you've never seen Slapshot, but happy that you're covering it. Good episode. Enjoyed hearing about Directed by John Ford. That's a good flick. Well, thanks for the email, Sean. I think Tyler actually got Directed by John Ford for Christmas and watched it with very recently, so he's probably going to talk about that in the Media Consume section again coming up soon. We also have a Twitter account, so you guys can check us out on Twitter, twitter.com/NJNMpodcast, and we do have one new follower. We're going to be reading our new followers until, I don't know, until we get bored of reading our new followers. So at Vicky7389, thanks for the follow there. Much appreciated. You guys can always call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or send us your thoughts about, you know, Signs or Death to Smoochie or any of the other movies that we've done at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. So let's go ahead and finish up the character name game. I believe I started it early on this episode, and the character's name was Dr. William Block. So keeping in mind that this character has to have some sort of connection, whether that be through actor, director, producer, whatever, to a movie that came out in wide release this week, this past weekend. So what do you guys think? Any guesses for what movie Dr. William Block appears in?
It's a movie that came out in wide release in theaters.
Well, it has some sort of connection to it. It could be like one step. Like it could be, I don't know. I don't want to give you any hints. We'll see. Just throw out some guesses and I'll let you know hot or cold.
What came out this weekend?
True Grit did come out. I think Little Fockers came out as well. And Gulliver's Travels, if I'm not mistaken.
So the answer is either Jack Black.
It could be. Yeah, some sort of connection in there somewhere. Start guessing movies. Dr. William Block.
Yeah, no, I have no clue.
No guesses.
I'm going to go with The Incredible Hulk on this.
Okay. I don't really know what the connection would be there, but I appreciate a guess.
I don't even know where to begin.
All right, I'll give you a hint. True Grit is the movie related to.
Matt Damon.
Could be a Matt Damon movie.
Or is it Jeff Bridges?
It could be a Jeff Bridges. It's not.
Big Lebowski?
Nope, it's not Jeff Bridges.
Okay.
I'll narrow it down.
Josh Brolin?
It is Josh Brolin. That is the connection. Now you just have to name what Josh Brolin movie a Dr. William Block appears in. And this one's going to be tough. No.
W.
No.
Jonah Hex.
No.
W.
No Country for Old Men?
No, it's a movie that...
Jonah Hex.
That came out in 2007.
W?
No. It's not W. This particular film...
Planet Terror?
Yes, Planet Terror is correct, yes. That's right.
You're looking up
at it. Yeah, yeah, the Planet Terror, directed by Robert Rodriguez, so coming back to the El Mariachi connection earlier.
I would have never gotten that.
Well, that was just kind of an extra level of connection. But yeah, Josh Brolin plays Tom Chaney in True Grit, the remake of True Grit, which came out this past weekend, so there's that. All right, so let's go ahead and tell everybody where people can track us down on the internet. Jared, we'll start with you.
I can't be found, but I do live on Pecan Road in Tallahassee, Florida.
Okay, that's
we have a long driveway. I'll see you coming.
Probably more information than people need to know. Tim, any place that people can track you down?
No, not really. I frequent a lot of websites, but I don't write or anything like that.
Okay,
so.
All right, fair enough.
I frequent websites, too.
Oh, God. All right, well, you guys can track me down on Twitter, twitter.com/BenPears, geektyrant.com, filmonic.com, and writing reviews at notjustnewmovies.com, which is the namesake for this podcast. You can also find Pat and I on the Geek Tyrant Weekly podcast. And music for our show is provided by George Turner and the Bandits. You can find their music at gtbandits.com. They are also on Twitter and Facebook, so check them out there. Also, I didn't mention before, we are on Facebook, and you can subscribe to this podcast for free in iTunes. Leave us a review. That would be awesome. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. So
you forgot to give your gamer name, your PS3
I'm user. Not giving my gamer name. Okay, fine. If you have a PS3... My gamer tag or whatever is Cedar Malone. One word. I don't know why.
Cedar, C-E-D-A-R.
Yeah, I don't know why anyone would want to know that.
Come take him down in Uncharted 2.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to be watching Death to Smoochie next week, so feel free. I promise you we will be watching Death to Smoochie. Even if it disappears off of the instant queue, I will hunt it down at a Blockbuster or something. I will not lead you people astray again with another wrong movie title.
And if he can't find it at Blockbuster, he will hunt Robin Williams down and force him to recreate the entire movie in his living room.
That would be preferable, actually. But, yeah, so feel free to check that out, and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
I've got the blues. I've got the blues, real bad.